This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Wow. Another day and another scenario. We kind of seem to move so seamlessly from one situation to another so rapidly. And it sort of reminds me how quickly we moved onto this new war footing when we were all woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning on that Friday morning, which seems like an age ago now. And then yesterday at 8 p.m., we were advised that all restrictions had been lifted in Israel and schools have reopened and businesses have reopened. And we're into a completely different scenario, like almost like flicking a switch. And while I think it demonstrates a certain level of fortitude and ability just to flow with whatever the Middle East brings us, I think it also kind of shields a little bit of our emotion, because there were 28 people killed over the last 12 days. And there are 3,000 people who have been injured, and there are more than 100,000 people who have been left homeless over the last 12 days. And we should not be allowing ourselves to just surf over those facts for a moment. We can't. We have to take a moment and think about what we've been through. And even though there is a great deal to be grateful for and a great deal to compliment and to be victorious about, I don't think that we can afford ourselves the luxury of not thinking for a moment what the cost has been to us.
Right.
And I know that we don't want to demonstrate that sensitive side outwardly, and we don't want to allow the Iranians to see that we are grieving and that we are hurt and that the loss that we've suffered has been substantial.
Right.
And we haven't even spoken about the buildings that have been destroyed and the lifetime of research that was destroyed at the Weizmann Institute and people's homes that have been lost and people who are suffering from shell shock and from post-trauma as a result of having to have run to bomb shelters in the middle of the night. And yesterday morning in particular, when we had that last hurrah from the Iranians, and they sent us to bomb shelters numerous times. And the four people who were killed in Beersheba yesterday, I don't really know what their story was, because there's so many conflicting reports, whether they were in fact in their bomb shelter or whether they had been released from the bomb shelter and couldn't get back quick enough for the next barrage of rockets, whatever it is. Four lives were snuffed out in an instant. And we are grieving. We are hurt. We are really not feeling good about that. And even though, as I say, everything is reopened today and we're kind of back to school again and back to work and back to restaurants and the gyms have reopened and everything else, flights are back on and people are coming home and managing to travel out. But we are hurting right now. We really are.
It's absolutely right. And I think it's important to note that, because it's very easy to get caught up in the rhetoric of it all. How much was achieved and how much was, but the real people and real families that whose lives have just been completely, completely destroyed. Let's talk about the ceasefire now after this 12-day war. Restrictions, as far as I understand, have been lifted. Do you just like switch switch on and carry on your life as though it was 14 days ago.
Well, almost. And it reminds me a little bit of the switch that we do between Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaTzma'ut. The day of mourning comes to an end and the day of joy begins. And we almost flick a switch and we just say, we're moving on, we need to move on. And I think there is a lot to be said in favor of that. There is a good reason why we've managed to survive, because we're able to do that. We're able to mourn at the time of mourning, and we're able to move forward at the time that we move forward. And we literally have just moved into a state of whatever it was, usual routine as we had it 14 days ago. And of course, we have an opportunity, first of all, to review the events of yesterday, when the ceasefire was apparently coming into to place, and the president was extremely unhappy with Israel. The president of the U.S. was extremely unhappy with Israel because apparently there were still pilots in the air and bombs that were about to be dropped. And he sent out this great tweet which says, bring your pilots home, don't drop the bombs. And then afterwards he let that F-bomb out, where he was really angry that Israel had been audacious enough to really let loose in the final hours before the ceasefire was declared. I'm not sure whether he expected Israel to say, oh, we know that the ceasefire will be coming up in 12 hours' time. We're going to bring everybody home in the meantime in anticipation of that ceasefire. I think that that was kind of the scenario that he had anticipated. Mm. In reality, the Iranians, like Israel, saw the last few minutes and even the time after the ceasefire had come into to force, they saw that opportunity to fire. And that was one of the most deadly barrages of Iranian missiles that Israel experienced. So I don't think that we could turn around and say, oh, well, Israel should have been sitting on their hands. In fact, the reality was that Israel used those last few hours to really do a lot of damage to Iran's military infrastructure and to do a lot of damage to their nuclear program by taking out another nuclear scientist who was critical in the whole program. So Israel really used those chances, those last few hours, to inflict as much damage as possible. The president of the U.S. wasn't happy, but the ceasefire is now in place. And as I say, all goes back to normal. The prime minister came onto TV last night to put forth all the successes of the 12-day war. And of course, the Iranians had a victory party in Tehran last night, parade. And I think they have a lot to be feel victorious about, because the fact that the Iranian regime has outlasted this war, I think, is a point of victory for them. That the government is still in place as it was, that the opposition didn't use the opportunity that had been presented to them to overthrow this government, because I would have thought that over the last 40 odd years, that was really the most opportune moment for the those forces who oppose the Islamic regime in Iran to overthrow the Islamic government, and they didn't succeed in doing that. And it seems as if, though, Iran, the Iranian society, has been left pretty much intact following this war, which means the Iranian Islamic regime continues to rule. We will obviously over time assess what military damage and what damage has been done to their nuclear program.
Yeah, because there's a lot of confusion. There's this report that's going around, and Trump's denying it. It's very hard to understand what the real damage has been here.
I think that that will really only come out in time. And I think that anybody who pretends now to be able to tell us exactly what damage has been done is probably telling some untruths, because I think it's extremely difficult at this early stage to assess. I saw the report which said only a few centrifuges were damaged, and that the stock of uranium still remains intact, and that they could potentially, within a few months, build a nuclear warhead. I saw that report. I don't believe all of what's written there, in the same way as I don't believe the Trump rhetoric, which says everything was obliterated.
Mm.
I don't believe that either. I think the truth is probably somewhere in between, and we'll need to take our time just to assess all of that. I also need to assess what damage was done to the military infrastructure. There seems to be little doubt that Israel succeeded in destroying many of Iran's ballistic missiles. Some of them were used to fire towards Israel. Many others were destroyed. I think it's true that many of their rocket launchers were destroyed, some of them on the launch pad as they were about to launch missiles towards Israel. The launchers, the hardware, and the launchers, the human element, those people who were launching the missiles, I think many of them were also destroyed. I think we also managed to destroy many of their missile manufacturing plants, which will slow down their ability to replenish their supply of ballistic missiles quite substantially. And the storage and the hardware, the industry that goes around it, I think was very, very clearly targeted. Surgically targeted, I think, is the best way to describe it, because I think the intelligence was fantastic where that was concerned. And of course, one can't argue with the senior leadership of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard that was taken out. Two chiefs of general staff in 1 week were killed, as well as many of their top leadership, and they acknowledged, they put out obituary notices for those individuals who were killed. So there is little doubt that the intelligence was incredibly accurate in going after those individuals. And of course, a lot of work was done into, was put into destroying the nuclear facility, whether it be all of those scientists who were individually targeted, whether it be the heavy water facility at Arak, whether it be the reactors at Isfahan, Fordo, and Natanz that the US attacked, and Israel also had chances to attack some of those facilities as well. Access to the nuclear sites, industry around it, manufacturing facilities, I think a lot of work was done, which was intelligence-led. So all in all, I think that the operation was successful from Israel's perspective. And I think that we held up on the home front. I mean, to consider that we had more than 1,000 drones launched towards us within 12 days and hundreds of ballistic missiles, literally hundreds of ballistic missiles, and that in the end, we can say only, and I say only in inverted commas, a loss of 28 very, very valuable lives. And even though we suffered damage and there are injuries and many people have remained homeless, I think that our air defense system really proved itself, really held up. I think our electromagnetic warfare system really proved itself and held up. So I think that our defense, I mean, Israel traditionally spends a lot more of its investment in building defensive weaponry than it does on offensive weaponry, whereas Iran spends most of its money and time building ballistic missiles, Israel spends most of its money and time building the Iron Dome and building the Iron Beam and building the Arrows anti-missile system and the David Sling and other similar ones in order to defend ourselves rather than having the wherewithal to necessarily attack. I think our Air Force was incredible. They ruled the skies of Iran. They took out the threats against the aircraft on the first night. They were flying sorties that were 2,500 kilometers away from home, hitting places in a very surgical way. I think our Air Force really needs to stand up and take a bow. They've done an incredible job, really incredible job. And I think that it's worth mentioning that it's the first time in Israel's history that a foreign power has attacked an enemy of Israel on behalf of Israel. And that was when President Trump ordered the B-2 bombers to Isfahan, Fordo, and to Natanz. That is the first time in Israel's history we've had a lot of help defensively. We've had a lot of countries helping us, providing us with weaponry behind the scenes, even shooting down missiles that have been coming towards Israel. But that's the first time that we've ever had a foreign power join with our forces and carry out an attack on a foreign enemy in conjunction with our forces. And I think that we need to stand back for a moment and consider how that happened and how it was that in the year the war of 1948, the war of independence, when Israel was on its knees and hardly had an army and really needed foreign armies to come and help, it didn't happen. And in 1973, and during the Yom Kippur War, when Israel was one whiff away from being destroyed and needed the help of foreign armies, not help, not necessarily only to defend, but indeed to attack, it never happened. But now that we have the strength of the army that we have, now we have foreign armies coming to help us. It's an interesting story, it will be one that we will think about a lot.
For sure. Absolutely. That's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, 8 o'clock, you can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.